Hello, and welcome to episode 29 of the Planning Period Podcast. You're Ed Breakroom. I'm your host, Brad Schreffler. This week on the show, I am joined by Rola Tibshirani. Rola is a grade 6 French immersion teacher out of Ottawa, Canada. She is also a regular on the OnEd Mentor show on VoiceEd Radio, and I was on a panel show with her on inquiry-based learning for Sarah Ann Lalonde's show, Que Sera Sera. And she is also my thankee for the first ever VoiceEd Gratitude Week that we have been running on Twitter all through the week of December 22nd. Rola is a passionate educator who believes strongly in putting ownership of learning in the student's control. She does this through design thinking and inquiry-based learning, and she really knows her stuff. When I heard her on the IBL panel, I knew I needed to have her on my show, and thankfully she agreed. Rola and I talk a lot about the need for teachers to let go of control in their classroom, and ways in which we can make that easier on them. We also talk about being a lifelong learner, trusting your students, staying curious, design thinking, inquiry-based learning. We talk about a lot. So, sit back and enjoy episode 29 of the Planning Period Podcast, my interview with Rola Tibshirani. Hello, everybody, and welcome to this episode of the Planning Period Podcast. I am your host, as always, Brad Schreffler, and I am so excited tonight because, as most of you probably know if you follow me on Twitter or VoiceEd Radio or anywhere else for that matter, this week has been the VoiceEd Gratitude Week. And I have been thrilled and lucky and I cannot say how happy I have been to get to spend my last week thanking Rola Tibshirani. Did I get it? Nice! Yes. Win! Never actually said your last name, so win-win. Awesome. So, hey, Rola, how's it going? How are you doing? Welcome on the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And I'm just so thrilled also to meet you face-to-face, kind of, on virtually, and get to meet with you and get to know you, too.
Yeah, I agree. It's been awesome. We were on a panel together with Sarah Ann Lalonde on inquiry-based learning. And I was there as someone who knew nothing about inquiry-based learning, and you had such great insights and great ideas. That whole panel was just awesome, and so I knew months ago that we needed to set this interview up, and like I said before we hit record, I was so excited when the name draw happened for VoiceEd Gratitude, and I saw your name, and I was like, I'm interviewing her this week! That's perfect! Like, I can tie this all together, and everything will be great. So I'm so excited to get a chance to talk to you. But for my audience who has not been researching you and looking into you for the last 7 days. Can you tell us a little bit about who you are and what you're up to?
Yes. So I'm from Ottawa, Canada, and I teach French immersion. Presently changed to grade 7 and enjoying it, loving middle school. Previously, I've taught grade 6, and previously I've taught overseas with international baccalaureate schools as well. And so it's exciting. I love learning every day with the students. I love taking those risks, and they are amazing because they make us look so good all the time. They are the brave ones who are embracing all this learning, and I'm just learning along with them.
That's awesome. I've had a lot of non-standard classroom teachers recently, so it's kind of exciting to get a chance to talk to someone who's in a more, I guess you'd say, quote-unquote, traditional role. So that's exciting. And I love you guys in Canada have all your dual language stuff going on. Like, that's such a cool, we don't have that much here in the States. I mean, we have a few schools that, you know, in my area in Florida, we have a few schools that do Spanish immersion and some of that stuff, but it's pretty rare. And I love that you guys, the way your system works up there.
So French, when I say French immersion, it's not just French second language, but the kids are also taking science, social studies, history, all the other courses. The only thing that they don't take in French would be just English and math.
Okay. So what do you teach in that realm?
So in this role this year presently, I'm teaching science, social studies, and French.
Okay.
And it's a Catholic school I'm working at, so we have a bit of religion, which turned out to be more of like social justice, social emotional learning. It's turning out doing a lot of design thinking process throughout the religion as well as all the other interdisciplinary courses.
Excellent. And you mentioned design thinking, so I have to point out, make sure you check out, for my audience, one of the most recent episodes of Que Sera Sera, where Rola was on there talking about design thinking. And it was such a cool, you know, that's one of those terms that I hear floated around a lot, but I didn't I kind of knew what it was, but I couldn't really point to it. And you had such a great perspective on it, talking about what design thinking is and how you use it in your classroom with your students. I thought it was great because you had such a real, like, this is something I do and here's what my kids think. And I thought that was such a great perspective to bring to that conversation.
Yeah, yeah. So it's, as you know, it's nothing new. Many teachers do it, but what is really important is how much of the process is owned by the students. How are the students reflecting throughout the process? How our students are growing with their learning process or design process or writing process. Anything that you're doing is basically design thinking, as long as students taking full ownership of it and getting feedback and iterating their ideas and their designs or their anything they're working on. So everything is basically designing. As long as it's called designing, they're owning the full process. It's full personalized and ownership of learning.
Love it. And that hits so many of the veins I think are so critical in what we do right now and are being missed in a lot of classrooms. And I think that's actually a pretty perfect lead-in to my first question for you, which is, what do you think is the biggest problem facing education today?
I don't know if it's a problem. It's basically teachers having to let go. I think that's the biggest part. We need to step back from just delivering content. We need to step into the student center format, where students take full ownership of learning. Again, you probably hear that over and over again. So in the sense of learning is a process. Learning takes time. So when you start working with having to cover coverage bases, that becomes very limiting because the students are not really being involved in creating their learning. So you need to take that time. They need to ask their questions. They need to build that knowledge together. And it's amazing how they become experts themselves at their learning. It does take time, and I love it, and I'm willing to take that time to do it, because when you're allowing kids to take their ownership of learning, their competencies are developing. So they're not only they're building knowledge and understanding together, or creating, being creative, being critical thinkers, but their competencies like collaboration is in place, communication is in place. So they're becoming confident and comfortable with all their competencies that are required for their life skill learning. So they build those skills, and that is the key to success with them, where they believe that they owned everything. So the beginning of the year looks very different from where it is right now. Right now, the kids actually, I give them the overall expectations of the curriculum, and they're ready to tackle that. So they take the overall expectation, they negotiate what they're going to learn together, they co-construct the criteria together. They are presently, we're looking at doing tour builders. And I mean, it's amazing how technology just kind of becomes the audacity of their thinking, and with critical thinking and creativity. So presently they are deciding how to present the project, what they're going to do with it, how the project is going to make a difference to others learning from around the world. So we always have an audience, and we always reach an expert. So it's a full ownership of learning, and it's exciting for them because they are so immersed in the learning.
Cool. You know, one of the things you pointed out there is time. And I'm curious, because when I'm pushing new initiatives or suggesting things to teachers or trying innovative ideas, one of the first things they push back on is, how do we do this with our scope and sequence or course layouts or, you know, district learning maps and whatever you may call them? How do we take that time when we have so many other standards to get to?
Exactly. So I don't teach high school. I know that high school, maybe it's a little different. This year in middle school, like, I'm used to having, I came from teaching 100 minutes to 75 minutes and now to 50 minutes. So time, I understand how precious time is. So there are moments that maybe we need to consolidate and come to, you know, certain understanding. And that is basically, kids are taking notes together. So there are different moments. So what happens with the time is, what I'm finding is, you've got to tweak your tasks. So when you're thinking about time, am I thinking, what task or what, how are the kids are going to learn that their competencies are going to be immersed? So you're tweaking things around, basically. You're thinking, okay, am I giving them a chance to collaborate? Am I giving them a chance to ask each other questions? So time is a constraint, but then when the kids are creating their own learning, you're covering so much more than just the standards. So because they're digging and they're questioning some more, it's amazing how much you cover. And it's that risk, taking that risk and highlighting those standards as the kids become inquirers or learning on their own. So you go above and beyond, basically, and thinking about those rich tasks that require kids to expand their thinking and to use their competencies.
So is it really so simple, or is it too simplistic to say that the front loading lets you speed up later on? Is that an overly simplified way to put it?
This is where, yes, of course, because you're building that community, right? You're building that trust. The kids need to build that. You have to give them short tasks where they are required. You're highlighting, consolidating on specific things. So when your kids are communicating, so they need to learn that they're valuing each other's thinking, respect, building that community of learning, developing their social emotional learning, developing the perspective, developing all those things. So when you have that in control and the kids know that it's their responsibility, they have a responsibility to build knowledge together, then you can, like right now, as I said, at the moment, I'm just giving them the standards, the overall expectations, we call them the curriculum, and they are unpacking everything. So it does take time, and I find it faster now. They're older. We're like in grade 6, I would spend 2 months doing a lot of tasks that require to develop their competencies. And we called them last year, which I wrote about in a blog, it's called the unlearning or the anti-goal. So we did a lot of unlearning of recognizing our habits, what kind of things we have to let go to make rooms for valuing each other's thinking. So you also need to work with a lot of thinking strategies. So there's the Project Zero thinking strategy that you work with, where students have these different strategies that they connect and work. And also I Altman thinking schools in Canada. And so they have the I Think, which is integrative thinking tools. And those integrative thinking tools where the students collaborate together to take any wicked problem and work together in order to come up to conclusion. So there's a lot of layers to the task. It's not just like letting go. It's how rich are the conversation, how rich are the tasks in order for the kids to consolidate and learn. So they have to figure out that learning piece. It does take time for sure. So it's something, if imagine the whole school doing that, how rich would that be by the time these kids do grade 11, grade 12, and then the richness that they can just take anything and, you know, tackle it.
Can you give me an example of a task? Like, what is the task maybe that sticks out in your head the most or that you're doing now, either one? What is the example of a task, and how does that connect to a standard in your curriculum?
So, for example, okay, we can take a task we just finished, and that was guided task with me. We'll take something that is simpler, that the kids are not just unpacking what they are right now. So we did ecosystems. So we started the ecosystems by their inquiring. What do you think it is? What do you think we need to learn? What do we need to do to learn? And so we're very lucky that we live in an area that there is a beaver pond next to us. So we went on a walk. I like always connecting to experts. I think having experts and having an audience with the student, that really helps them a lot. So we connected to an expert who is a naturalist. I just accidentally happened to ask the parents, and somebody knew someone. And so we had an expert come on a walk with us. And so not only that, we learned about the interdependence and connectivity, but we also had an expert with us who we discovered three ecosystems. We did water samples. We looked at which animals are indispensable for the ecosystems. So developing that and then going back to the classroom and having to document all that. So we collected data about what is an ecosystem, what makes an ecosystem healthy. And so then they, through that, they called something we call the ladder of inference. So they came up to a conclusion, is beaver pond a healthy environment? What other impacts do humans have? And negative, positive. And we saw those just on a walk. So taking that, and then they build a causal model, what causes and factors create an ecosystem. So they've unpacked everything above and beyond the curriculum because they got into things from the global goals, from the climate change. They got into influences on economic, political, and social development. So imagine how much that was tied in. And so they slowly led themselves into the geography piece, and that's why I decided to go on and do the physical geography with them because they were leading the learning, and that's part of the curriculum that they are doing. So there's a sample of, you know, having to just develop learning with rich tasks. So it took a long time because we took soil testing. They were interested in soil. They were interested in how different soils, nutrients in it. Like, they went above and beyond. And the learning that they have acquired is unreal. Fantastic learning.
So they go, you take them on this walk, right? You take them on this walk to see the beaver pond, and they're like, huh, I wonder how this got here. What's your part in that? Where, obviously you're making sure no one falls in the pond. I think that's a pretty obvious role, but what's your role to guide this, to support it, to facilitate it? What does that look like?
So what it looked like, there's a lot of provocation along the way. So I look at real world things happening. We look at how wolves were reintegrated in some parks. How come there's hunting in some areas? The hunting season in Canada too. And there's a couple of kids who actually go hunting, with their parents. And so there was a lot of provocation, a lot of curiosity. And then what was interesting, having a guide with us who knows the area well, because he brought in history too, because he talked about which are the native trees and which trees were brought in from Europe in the 1800s. And so it really ignited their thinking because they didn't look at a tree as a tree. They looked at it, they were asking rich questions. So why is this tree different from that tree? How does that tree, is that a native species? Is that a species brought in from outside? What makes it a native species? So there was a history piece of it as well. And so we got to an area where there are invasive species, so the trees were cut down. So how do you control those kind of things? So their curiosity ignited, and there was a positive influence as well at Beaver Pond and how it was built in order to prevent the rainwater from just dumping in. So it was a filtering system. So they were ignited. I mean, they were so excited, and they had tools with them that they were taking pictures, they were documenting. And so that helped a lot because we invited Monsieur Poirier again to our class to continue and look at the causal model that they built. If they had any further inquiries, we connected online as well to scientists to ask more questions. And everything within your reach, right? You can look for anything up online. So it was really exciting for them. So I also have a digital promise from HP, and so we have a sprout, so the kids were able to take the objects that they brought and build an ecosystem around that object. So what other animals depended on the objects? How was that? It really is enriching, because also we looked at trees, how some were used by the First Nation people or Aboriginal people as medicine as well. So when kids were really looking at animals, a plant, they were also looking at which difference to the ecosystem. And yeah, so it's very rich. And none of the stuff was delivered for me. I just provoked them, and we looked at a lot of things were happening in Canada within national parks and within our waters. And I'm lucky that some of the kids this year, I taught them last year in grade six. So our elementary goes up to grade six, and middle schools are with high schools. I have some of the kids last year, which we had connected a lot online last year with many experts. We did a week on water, and we learned that the waters in Canada, there's a lot of pollution and invasive species from other countries. So the curiosity is huge, and actually it never stops.
Very cool. One of the things I pull out of that is just flexibility. You know, you mentioned in the beginning, you know, about that's kind of where they led. And so I decided to go into physical geography because that made sense. And there's a lot of flexibility there. And I think that speaks to the art of teaching. That speaks to the non-quantifiable, the non-measurable part of what we do. But I'm wondering, how do you balance that with the expectations of an administrator to have lesson plans submitted in advance and know where you're going for the next week or 2 weeks? And when you're truly making decisions based on what's best for your kids and where they're interested, how do you still meet those administrative duties?
So I've been blessed and very lucky to work with amazing people. I've had 100% support all the way through because they see the benefit of the process. So I'm lucky that I'm working with a team who like they appreciate the process of learning. So long-term planning for me is I really look at the overall expectation the same way. And I look at, so what tasks, which tasks are we doing? What am I going to give the kids? What situations am I going to create for them? First, the provoking piece. What do I want them to kind of reading and writing and thinking? What are we, certain tools like integrative thinking tools or design thinking tools, what are they going to make? What's going to guide their thinking further? So those rich tasks are important because they're leading their learning. So you are, I'm learning with them. And I'm constantly listening to their conversations and they are kind of leading and through my provocations of questioning throughout the process, consolidate throughout the process, that guides also the thinking, right? So they're not just like just doing presentations. It's not just presentation. It's a lot of enrichment that are working on together and building that knowledge together. So my planning is an open source. It's all online. The kids can see it. The parents see it. We consolidate together. We plan for the next day. So it's all based on the overall expectation and the needs to answer those expectations. Researching what kind of tools do we need to research? How do you read online in French? How do you analyze a reading text? What do you need? So there are many things that are also embedded throughout the process. So we look at what do we need in order to be enriched with our learning? What do we need to adding? What do we need? So it's based on what they are creating and they are doing.
Cool. Very cool. Yeah. And I think you're lucky. I feel like teachers in my school would struggle sort of getting approval on that. And I think you're extremely lucky in that you have that kind of support. And it kind of leads me into my second question, and you might have already kind of touched on this, but that's okay. My second question for all my guests is always, what is something you're doing that you wish all teachers would do?
Letting go, taking that risk of letting go. I think that's a key. Trusting the students, building the community of learning, for sure. It's letting go, and it's messy at the beginning. Yes, and be open with your students. Trust each other, because that's the key to success, that they're not looking at you for always making decisions for them. The piece needs to be togetherness, and they need to capture all that responsibility.
How did you get to a place in your profession or in your pedagogy or in your skills where you felt comfortable making that choice? Because I think a lot of teachers know they probably should do this, but they feel like they can't for whatever reason, whether it's classroom management or administrative expectations or standards or scope and sequence or pacing guides or whatever. A lot of people feel like they can't. So what is it that gave you the confidence to take that leap?
Growing up, I was always curious, and I didn't like people to tell me what to do or how to learn. So I felt the same way that the students needed that. They needed a place to grow. They needed a place to really feel the learning. And so I slowly started with inquiry-based learning. And again, because I have taught with the International Baccalaureate School overseas, boost into the International Baccalaureate program, which is all inquiry-based as well. So it's building up that confidence within myself. And I'm a risk-taker. So being a risk-taker, that is learning. So I'm not afraid of failing with the students and having to consolidate about it. So, and having parent support. Parents love it. Like, it's amazing because they see how students their kids are becoming inquirer. They're becoming rich conversation communicator. They take things not just by looking at them. They take and question things, and they research. And what it becomes is you become a learner in the sense of you're always learning. They don't have to oppose anything introduced to them or given to them. not working anymore in a framework. They're becoming curious. They're becoming creative. They want to know how things work. They want to put things together. And so that makes a huge difference. And you can hear the conversation with the parents as well. They say that they're surprised by how their kids are talking and becoming creative and critical thinkers.
How many years have you been doing this, would you say? How many years have you been doing this?
Extensively, I would say 15 years.
Okay.
But I have stepped further, I would say, the last 10 years, really full ownership of students' learning, slowly learning back. And I got to a point sometimes, I remember 6-7 years, okay, so I have all this evidence. What do you do with that? How do you assess this? I know I've given feedback. So I'm still learning right now. I have to deal with percentages now. So I am having a hard time to catch up to everything going on Twitter and everything because the kids and I were negotiating. So this is new to me, so I'm opening up to them and I'm saying I'm used to levels A, B, C. So how are we going to negotiate your percentage based on the process? Actually, this is what I've been doing today. I'm doing tomorrow. I'm having one-on-one conversation. And we are determining the grades together.
Would you say that in the last 10 years that you've really owned into this, I mean, I'm sure on your end it's gotten easier as you have more and more experience with it, but would you say sort of in the meta conversation in terms of the students that are coming into you, the parent support, that kind of stuff, would you say it's gotten easier or harder to go with this kind of learning in the last 10 years?
Easier. Technology plays a big part, right? It's much easier because it's so easy to track. It's easy for them to personalize their learning. It's easy for them to highlight what they have learned, determine their next steps. It's easy for them to personalize. It's easier to track. I find it easier, but again, I'm willing to take those risks, right? I'm in a new position again this year and I'm doing new learning as well. And that's very exciting and makes going to work every day even more and more exciting. If things didn't work, it makes it even more exciting to go the next day and figure out why it didn't work with the student. Responsibility. It does take time. And it's funny how fast they have progressed already because I'm working with all the kids as well. And it's amazing. I just love every moment of it. I wish I'd just been having a podcast. I think it's just finding the time. Because when you're doing creative work, I really have to go back at night and I'm constantly looking at what students produced online. And I'm having a hard time catching up to blog. I have so much to share, so I'm looking forward to the holidays, publishing a short little blogs a day about what I have learned based on students' evidence. I only speak to students' evidence. So I have a lot of evidence to talk about and how we progress through it.
Awesome. You know, one of the things I love that you just said is you said it's exciting when it doesn't work. Mm-hmm. And I think that might be in some way your secret sauce, because I think for a lot of other educators, for a lot of other people, that is terrifying. Like, we don't want it to not work in front of our kids. We're the experts. We're supposed to be the one that knows what we're doing. If it doesn't work, how do we do anything? And I think that's it's an impressive mindset to have for yourself to be able to do this, I feel like.
Yeah, and they're not just doing busy work, the kids. Like, it's not just everything that they're doing. They have created something with it. They are learning something. They're adding their thinking to it. So that makes it so rich. Like, it's just so huge. It's amazing. And then I turn the responsibility to them. So give me that evidence. Show me how you've learned. Native communication. If we're doing French, so highlight the things that you need to work on. So they take those next steps. And so it's just so rich. And it just, like, you know, it turns them into such responsible.
I love that. It's awesome.
It's exciting.
I'm ready to go just force my kids to inquire about something. Like,
you have to provoke them with something that is really relevant to the, like, if you're doing, you're saying standards curriculum, like, there's so much going on in the world, right? Like, there's so much. I mean, even we finished ecosystem, we still look at a lot of things that are happening around the world with the ecosystems as a positive and negative impact. And we looked at that, and we look at everybody's perspective. They love doing these kind of things. And so that passion grows in with the students. And we also, like, take a lot of, like, because of my digital promise, and I'm very, again, blessed to have books and everything that works, you know, HP books in the classroom, that the kids are used extensively as well. And so to solve a problem within our community, so we can contacted the Humane Society. They've already, so working with this client, having someone to come in and give them a problem and give them feedback about their designs is so rich, and then taking it to the Humane Society, how they're training the animals, and it's amazing. Like, that is so rich. And the kids want to iterate and change the idea. And it doesn't matter if it doesn't work. So they've gone through 12 different ways of doing it. Right? It's huge. Yeah. It's a huge learning.
It's awesome. You're doing, I mean, I've said this before on the show, but I definitely want you to be my son's sixth grade teacher. I think I need to make that happen. The only problem with that statement is, like, I have to move all around the world. Like, every year I have another teacher for him somewhere else in the world, which I don't think is probably in his best interest, but, you know, it'd still be cool.
That's my dream. My dream is to have a school to go around the world.
Yeah.
A classroom to go around the world and just learn. From place to place.
So, I love it. I'm so excited. I'm loving all of this. This is great. Now, I know you don't have as much experience with it, but do you feel like you have it a little bit easier because the students aren't quite as jaded in the elementary sixth grade level versus trying to implement this with high school? Because I've implemented things like this, not on this level, but I've tried to do things like this with my students where they take the ownership, and my high schoolers, especially juniors and seniors, are just kind of like, whatever, what do I have to do to get the points? Like, just tell me what to do. And I'm wondering, is that because I'm not giving them enough framework, or do you feel like the students do become jaded because you're not the norm, right?
Yeah. That's interesting because, again, like, as I said, this year, so I've had kids come from different schools and different mindset. And don't forget that my students also, they're not with me the whole day, right? So they're rotating around. So they're going to different classroom, different mentality, different setup, different expectations as well. It's the task. It goes back to the tasks. Okay. It goes back to, I think that's the richness. So what are we doing what am I doing in classroom to make those tasks, to tweak it and make it rich enough for them to really take that responsibility and not wait for an answer? So we've had those moments at the beginning. And they think, you're really asking me to dig all that stuff out? Like, what is wrong with you? Why don't you just give it to me, right? So those are the kind of things really that you have to build up with them. So it's the provoking piece and tweaking those tasks that they have to communicate together, that they have to collaborate together. They have to learn. So we unpack at the beginning of them short little games or short little tasks. That what is collaboration? What is interpersonal relationship? How do you build that? How do you talk to each other? We can't just say to kids, collaborate and go communicate, because that has to be unpacked and it has to be co-constructed, and they have to have a kind of a feeling. So how is that beneficial for learning than just sitting and taking notes and going home and just studying and just, you know, learning in that direction? So it does take time. I know there are a lot of many high school teachers, even at our school or other schools, are doing some amazing things with their students. But again, it's building that culture. That's the key. You cannot just show up and just say, okay, now you're going to collaborate and do this. They're not going to find a value in it unless that something that you have given them, those short, mini little kind of tasks that requires that design thinking pieces in it. To see the value of it and how, because you can't, I mean, communication for adults is even hard. Like, how do you take turn to listen and how do you to ask someone, please tell me more without having to offend them? What kind of tools are we giving them by having to speak clearly? What might you do if this happens? So those are the kind of things that have to be embedded. So what is collaboration? What does that look like? But how can you value someone else's? How can you let go of something that you have made up or you have connected to and use from the others and create one product or create learning together?
Cool. Awesome.
Yeah, it's a very deep learning. Requires those are kind of like those little mini steps that the students really have to develop to see value in it.
Yeah, and I think that's critical. There is high school students especially need to see value in what you're doing, and maybe that's the part I feel like I'm missing is that I'm not making that value component clear enough to my kids. And maybe with high schoolers, that needs to be more explicit because in many cases, unfortunately, that meant that inquiry in themselves, that own internal process has been shut down by school so many times. So maybe that's the part that I need to key in on, and maybe my listeners as well.
Yes, and to also give them the strength, the trust into themselves to be talking, that their ideas count. And I remember like a lot of the reflection of the students, they said, I used to be scared of talking because I was always judged. So now I am not afraid of talking, even if his or her French is not very well spoken, but they're not afraid of presenting their thinking anymore.
Awesome.
Because they know that their thinking is respected and valued and connected.
That's great. Well, that's going to lead me into my third prepared question that I ask all my guests, and it is a little different than the other two. And that question is, who is the best teacher you have ever had?
My grade 12 high school teacher. Because he always let us kind of gave us a responsibility, let us inquire. It was a lot of hands-on. And so I really liked it that I was creating things, I was making things, I was inquiring. My grade 12 high school teacher, science, enjoyed it a lot.
Is there one like particular moment that sticks out to you? Is there a thing that you remember fondly from that?
Yes, being able to collaborate, being able to talk, not having to sit, having to be in a lab, having to be standing, having to walk around, having to touch and feel and move things around. I think that setup is important because, again, it doesn't have permanent seating. The kids, I'd never tell them where to sit. We have folding tables. We have folding benches. We have balls. We have cushions. So they are comfortable in their learning situation. And I can relate to that because I enjoyed the classroom where I was able to stand and walk and choose my seating. That makes a huge difference, that environment. And so that's what stuck with me is I really enjoyed my grade 12 work. Sit in desks or be single, files, or so we always collaborated and communicated around these kind of laboratory desks, standing desks.
It sounds to me like you're just a rebel. Like you just want to throw, you don't accept the old adage, like that's how we've always done it, or because that's how it's done, or, you're kind of just a, no, that you can't prove it. No, we're trying something else. We're just forget it.
Very good description. Don't follow the rules.
I can appreciate that. See, that's why you need a podcast. You need your own show. You gotta spread that rebel word.
I don't know how you do it. I look at everybody. Like I don't know how you guys fit it in. I can barely fit in. Just like. I have to do my yoga 3 times a week. I have to do my workouts, and that's my sanity because I'm always so engaged in everything that's going around from home, from school, everything. But I always question something. So why should the table be round? Why should the table, every table should look the same? Why should the chair always, So I've always been in that kind of rebel. So I, if you're designing something, make it personal, change it differently. The same thing in my everyday life. Why should everyone, you go to a store, you see, whatever, 500 shirts looking the same. who said shirts had to have collars or whatever. I don't know. Nothing with the norm for sure.
I love it. I think that's awesome. You know, I don't know that I'm on your level, but I definitely can appreciate that rebel mentality. You know, when this show started, that was, people asked me like, what is the goal of your show? And I was like, well, I don't have one because that doesn't seem necessary. And when they really would press and ask for one, I said, okay, well, if you want one real goal, my goal is to just convince one teacher to say, forget the rules. I'm going to do what's best for my kids. So I totally get that rebel mentality. I'm 100% with you. Not quite to the point of redesigning chairs, but I'm there.
I have to make it my own. Yeah. You have to make it something you're comfortable with that you can really own it. You cannot just do things because that's the way it's always been done, right? Fine, I could take what's best working from that, but what else could I do different? I can never do the same thing. I never do the same project. We never do the same thing. I mean, I've never done anything from this year to year the same thing because there is learning. I'm learning. I'm building my learning. Of course, I've learned from that experience. What can I do different to learn with it some more, right? So what can I change?
I think on some level that sounds exhausting. Like, there's some comfort in repetition, right? Like, how do you, and I guess, I don't know, I think you kind of have to be that person that is okay with that. I don't know.
A repetition is good. It makes you, you gain experience, right? Mm-hmm. You gain experience. But what could I do to tweak something? So I'm always looking at competencies. I'm looking at kids collaborating. I'm looking at kids creating. I'm looking at kids building it. So what am I giving them a chance? What opportunities am I giving them to take that control, that ownership? Never the same because it's based on the learning.
I think that's a perfect place to close this thing out. I think that, you know, at the end of the day, it's based on their learning. I think that's perfect. That thoroughly sums up everything we've talked about tonight. So, Rola, I greatly appreciate you as a person, as a presenter. I love your voice on Voice Ed Radio. I love the perspective you bring. I, like everyone else, wish you could find a way to make the time work and start your own show. I'll tell you, podcasting's not as time-consuming as you think, especially if you do like some of us and just don't edit and just record and throw it on the stream.
Yeah.
But I
thank you so much. Thanks for this opportunity, for sure. And thank you for inviting me to really explain again how I'm learning and how I continue to learn. Thank you so much. And I love Voice Ed, and I love the whole community, my goodness, it's just amazing connecting, learning, and inquiring and being comfortable in a situation, speaking, having a voice.
How can my audience get a hold of you if they want to reach out, if they want more, if they want to know, like, how can I live the rebel life? How do I find Rola?
Twitter.
You're at Rola T, right? R-O-L-A-T?
At Rola, R-O-L-A-T. Yeah.
At Rola. She is worth the follow. She's got great stuff to see. And if you want to see what we're working on right now, you can always check out the hashtag hashtag VoiceEdGratitude. That's V-O-I-C-E-D, gratitude. We got lots of stuff going on there from me and Rola and tons of other people. I think there's 18 of us now participating in VoiceEdGratitude this week, which is kind of cool. And the hashtag is constantly being posted too, so lots of great stuff going on over there. Check that out. Some other great podcasters and voices on Voice Ed Radio. And Rola, thank you again. I really appreciate you being with me.
Thanks to you. Thank you for inviting me and being part of your learning process as well.
Absolutely. Thank you again, Rola, for sharing all that with us. You are so awesome. You share so many great ideas, and I genuinely love your work, so thank you. If you want to connect with Rola, she's on Twitter, at Rola T. You can also check out her blog, Learning in Progress, which I have a link to on the show notes. If you have comments or questions about the show, you can always connect with me on Twitter. I'm at Brad Shreffler. I love to hear from you, and if you're interested in being a guest on the show, that's a great place to reach out as well.
Until next week, remember, it should be exciting when it doesn't work. And I hope you all have a wonderful holidays. Music for the Planning Period podcast is the song Vicious by Kevin MacLeod, used under Creative Commons. You can find him at incompetech.com. The Planning Period podcast is also a proud member of the Voice Ed Radio Network, a 24-hour radio network all about education all the time. Voice Ed Radio. Your voice is right here.